Good morning. We have three cases scheduled for argument. The first case scheduled, we understand some of the counsel for the appellees were stuck in traffic. We've decided to call the second case on our 9 o'clock docket. We understand one of the counsel for appellee has excused himself temporarily. We're going to go ahead and call that case in any event. On the assumption Mr. McAllister will be here shortly. So we'll now call in the interest of BSH. Yes.
May it please the court, Mr. Wayne Griffin will argue for appellant, Mr. Ken McAllister and Mr. John Worley will argue for appellees.
Mr. Griffin.
Good morning. May it please the court. Your Honor, today before you is Corey Howard's appeal of a ruling from the trial court denying his overpayments and child support to be credited toward his future child support obligation. Basically, these parties were divorced in 1993, and between 1993 and 2008, Corey Howard paid $13,185 more than he was court-ordered to pay in child support. This is a fact that was stipulated to by the parties. Nobody disagreed with this fact. We agreed to this number was the amount that he paid in actual child support payments in excess of what was court ordered. Now, this amount, I would like to point out, does not include other payments he made for such things as orthodontic bills, medical bills, soccer payments, clothes he bought the child. We did not include those payments when we came to this figure. In fact, we came together and subtracted a few things that we'd accidentally added in. To take those types of payments out and say, no, this was just the amount he paid in actual checks and dollars directly to the mother. Now, the court order ordered him to pay through the Tarrant County Child Support Registry, which he did during the first couple of years because it was coming out of his Army paycheck and going through the registry. However, later, he and his wife decided not to do it through the registry and decided he would make payments directly to her. At the trial court level, we argued that under Section 15404, the statute states that if a child support agency or local child support registry receives from an obligor who is not in arrears a child support payment in an amount that exceeds the court-ordered amount, the agency or registry, to the extent possible, shall give effect to any expressed intent of the obligor for the application of the amount that exceeds the court-ordered amount. If the obligor does not express an intent, the registry shall credit the excess amount to the obligor's future child support obligation and promptly disperse the excess funds to the obligee. Now, at first glance, it would appear that this section doesn't apply because this is a directive from the legislature to a child support registry or child support agency to tell them how to handle excess payments. However, as we pointed out to the trial court, it doesn't seem fair that if I mail my $500 payment through the registry, but I'm only ordered to pay $200, then I will automatically get credit toward my future obligation of $300, which will be credited toward my future obligation. But Mr. Howard, who makes the same $500 payment on a $200 obligation, but makes it directly to her, doesn't get this credit.
Is there any explanation why he didn't send it to the child support office?
Your Honor, Yes, Your Honor, I believe if you look at the record from the transcript from the court, I think the
I don't have it.
Oh, well, I apologize, Your Honor. The transcript, I believe, shows that when questioned, Corey Howard and, I believe, his ex-wife both conceded that when he got out of the military and he went back to college and the two communicated, they always had a good communication. She said it takes too long to get through the Tarrant County Child Support Registry. Can you just give it to me? So he started doing that. He
agreed to do so. Was that her request?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Counsel, the statute that you refer to provides for giving effect to any expressed intent of the obligor, correct?
That's correct, Judge.
So it appears that at least insofar as your argument with regard to this statute or the principles in this statute apply in this case, intent would be key in determining how this should be treated, correct?
That's correct, Judge. In fact, that's exactly where the trial court focused in on. the trial court focused in, and when we started the hearing to present the evidence, she said, it's my understanding I have to determine his intent.
And now, the trial court made various findings of fact, one of which was that Mr. Howard intended for these increased support amounts to be current child support and not to be applied to future.
That is correct.
Okay, but those findings of fact have not been challenged.
That's correct, Your Honor. We don't challenge that he intended for those payments to be for child support.
Well, the court, though, it appeared to me very careful to find that he intended it to be current child support, not to be applied to future.
That
not
is
simply
correct.
Just child support, but current versus
That is
future.
Correct, Your Honor. But we don't argue that. We argue that the definition of intent under this statute is incorrect. In other words, the trial court erred in thinking that that's what I have to determine.
I'm not sure I understand. I mean, the statute just says that the agency is to give effect to the expressed intent.
That's
correct. And if the trial court in this case found that Mr. Howard's expressed intent was that these child support payments be current child support as opposed to being applied to future child support obligations, and if that finding's not challenged, it seems that we're bound by that.
And the court may be bound by the fact that he intended them to be for current support. I think we're going to have a problem with the current case law, as I pointed out in my brief. I named numerous cases where the courts of appeal and the Supreme Court has held that modification of child support lies only with the trial court judge. Two people cannot agree to modify. We have numerous cases where dad was ordered to pay, say, $200 a month. He went to mom and said, I lost my job. I can't afford it. Mom said, okay, just pay me $100 a month. So he did. He did what their agreement was. Later, they go before the court, and the court says, uh-uh, no, you can't do that. Only I can modify your child support.
Is there anything in the family code or in common law that prohibits a father or mother with a child support obligation for exceeding that obligation voluntarily?
No, in fact, the law, as pointed out by opposing counsels, actually says that a father or mother, an obligor, can pay more than what the court orders him to pay. He may always voluntarily pay more. One of the cases that was pointed out to the by opposing counsel stated that I always go back to McLemore. They've cited other cases that address the point you're making now. All those cases cited McLemore in that a father can always pay extra. Now in McLemore, they said a father can or mother or whoever is required to pay can always voluntarily pay more than what the court orders them to pay. In that particular case, he was behind on his child support. He was in arrears, and he was arguing that I should have been given credit for making payments for the child's needs. He tried to argue orthodontics payments. He tried to argue that he had made payments for clothes. He had given the children allowance, and I should be given credit for all those. And the court says, no, you are meeting your common law obligation to support your children that all parents have. I don't think that applies to money that he gave directly to his spouse. So the common law obligation would include all other things. And I think that's what the intent, when we define intent in the statute, the intent is, did he mean intent for, if you look at our petitioner's exhibit one, which is all of the checks, and you look in the memo section, the expressed intent that is put on every check either says child support or in some cases says child support slash braces, child support slash soccer, child support slash something else. That is the expressed intent that I think the legislature meant. Are you trying to meet your common law obligation to support your children in some other means? In other words, is this payment for something other than child support? If it is, if it's for braces or if it's for a medical expense or it's for soccer, then you don't get the credit for it because that extra money is going toward that.
Okay, I have a question. Finding 12, Corey Howard increased the amount he paid to Tricia Hamilton as child support in lieu of Tricia Hamilton taking legal action to increase support. How does that impact your argument that he paid it in exchange for her agreement not to ask the judge to increase the payments?
Judge, I go back to my former argument. What if it had been different? Instead of him agreeing to increase, what if they had agreed to decrease the payments?
No, I'm not talking about an agreement to increase or an agreement to decrease. I'm talking about I will not go back to court if you pay more money. I mean, a contractual arrangement. If you pay more money, you're paying for me not to go into court and get a court order.
Well, I don't believe that the testimony offered at trial was a quid pro quo that you're describing. I don't believe.
No, I'm just reading what the court has found, I think. I mean, it says findings of fact and conclusions of law, so that's what I'm reading, number 12.
I apologize, would you
read it again? Sure. Corey Howard increased the amount he paid to Tricia Hamilton as child support in lieu of Tricia Hamilton taking legal action to increase support. Does that impact your argument at all?
I don't believe it does, Judge, because I've already described the different our argument that intent was something other than what the court intertwined, but as if I may, this I'll bring it back to what you've just said. The state pointed out in its brief in the case that that the courts shall the courts shall to the best of their ability interpret statutes to harmonize with other laws. Okay, in that particular case, I looked it up and I read it. They were trying to harmonize the definition of warranty under the UCC with the definition of warranty under the DTPA. And so they were saying, look, you have to harmonize these. Well, if you look two sections over in the Family Code at 154.012, you have another section that says if an obligor is not in arrears and the obligor's child support obligation is terminated, the obligee shall return to the obligor a child support payment made by the obligor that exceeds the amount of support ordered. Well, they can agree all day long to pay less child support or pay more child support in lieu of going back to court, but does that take away obligee's burden to return any excess payments to her? It says it's regardless of whether the payment was made before, on, or after the date of the child support obligation. Well, if we can say that they agreed and thus in lieu of going back to court, they agreed and increased child support. Therefore, it's binding, and that's his new child support amount. Well, it's my understanding that you can't do that, even by agreement, whether it be because you're saving attorney's fees and going back to court on both sides or for whatever reason. My understanding of the case law is, sorry, parents can't do that. So only a judge can modify it.
So you're saying even though they intended it to be current child support, that intent is disregarded and you look only to whether they intended to be child support or intended to be the common law duty to support?
Or for something, correct, or for something other than. How do you square 154.012, harmonize it with 154.012? If we say intent means, hey, you can intend to increase your child support, by then the same argument, can't I say, well, I intended for my current child support to be 100 instead of 180, so don't hold me in contempt. Don't hold me in arrears. I intended under 154.014 for my current support to be $100 rather than $180.
That doesn't make any sense.
Of course it does. That's what my point. You can't agree to make it lesser. You can't intend or agree to make it lesser. How then can we say you haven't invaded the purview of the trial judge by agreeing to make it more? How can two parties who we've held time and time again say you cannot agree to a lesser amount of child support, how can we say, but you can agree to make it more, and we're going to hold you accountable for that amount that you made it more? And then there is no, there's no room for intent.
You can't agree to pay more. You can agree to pay more than what your child support amount is by under a court order. There's nothing under the law that prevents a parent from agreeing to pay more than what the child support amount is.
Now, I agree, Your Honor, but in the end, I think under 154.012, the person who paid more has a right to get the excess payments back.
And then the finding number 14.
Not if those payments are made voluntarily.
The number 14 finding, Corey Howard did not intend for payments made in excess of court-ordered support to be credited as future child support at the time he made the payments.
I'm sorry, Judge?
Finding number 14, Corey Howard did not intend for payments made in excess of court-ordered support to be credited as future child support at the time he made the payments.
I don't know why that has any bearing on 15414. It doesn't say that the intent must be that it's for future support.
But counsel, that strikes the very heart of your argument, which is that Mr. Howard should have been, as a matter of law, should have had the extra amount that he paid during this time period applied to future payments. And if that was not his intent, it seems to me that just strikes the very heart of your argument.
Your Honor, the statute goes on to say if the obligor does not express an intent, I understand it.
Go ahead. Finish, please.
It says if the obligor does not express an intent for the application of the amount paid in excess of court-ordered amount, the agency shall credit the excess amount to the obligor's future payment.
That's the statute that you have admitted or acknowledged in your brief doesn't apply to the facts of this case, correct?
I've acknowledged that it doesn't apply in that it is a direction to the child support registry.
Correct.
But if a child support registry doesn't follow that statute, I believe wholeheartedly if Mr. Howard had paid through the registry those exact same checks, he had sent them through the registry, the Attorney General's office would be saying this was applied to his future child support, he's done.
But he
did. I used to work for him, we did it all the time.
But he didn't.
He didn't, that's correct,
okay.
Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. McAllister, you're going to go first?
Yes, Your Honor. I apologize to the court for not being in the courtroom at 9 a.m. May it please the court. It's my pleasure today to be here to represent Tricia Hamilton. What I believe this case is that Corey Howard, after 8 years of reliance by Tricia Hamilton, decided he was going to try to take advantage of her.
Well, now, wait a minute. We're not a jury, so just stick to the facts, okay?
And not pay any child support for the last 2 years.
All right, then why is she not trying to take advantage of him by saying, don't pay it through the child support office. It takes too long. I don't want you to get credit through the child support office. Pay it directly to me, and oh, by the way, if you don't want me to go back to court, pay me more. Why isn't she taking equal advantage of him?
I believe that the record says that what happened, if it says anything, I don't believe it says that she went to him and said, don't pay it through the child support office. I believe that what the facts were is that he became unemployed, essentially, whenever he got out of the U.S. Army in 96 or 97, he got out of the Army. He had to start paying it direct because he didn't have an employer and there was no one to withhold it from. Therefore, he began making the direct payments, and they continued that as a matter of their habit, not as a matter of somebody saying, don't do it that way.
But does the record tell us clearly what happened?
Ma'am, I don't know. I heard you ask the question. I looked at it. I didn't have the opportunity to look at the record. I don't think the record says a thing about it, honestly. I don't think it says that she asked him not to pay.
But now, don't misrepresent the record. If you don't know what it says, don't tell us it says something.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
The two family code provisions relied upon by appellant do not fit the facts of this case. Number one, the child support payments were not made through any agency. Number two, the obligation to pay child support has not terminated. That is the holding of the two cases that have been brought forward to this court that are on point. The findings of fact and conclusions of law in this case have not been attacked. And as a consequence, they're binding on you. I know that you have pointed out findings 12 and 14. The trial court was the judge of the credibility of the witnesses. The trial court looked at the witnesses and the facts of the case and made those findings. Those findings show that at the time Mr. Howard was making the payments, that he did them as current child support and to in accordance with an agreement that was reached with Ms. Hamilton where they wouldn't be going back to court after he became employed after graduating from college. The
courts hold.
And also, apparently, because, as the court recited, he did not trust that the mother is making the best decisions with the extra money I provided her over the past five or so years.
That was the language out of Exhibit Number 8, the letter from Mr. Howard to his son after their relationship apparently deteriorated, according to the content of the letter. And yes, Mr. Howard said on the stand that, yes, that's my language, that's the letter I wrote, and it says, I've been paying these amounts of money so that you would have what you need as you grew up. Pretty clear what his intent was, even looking at it in retrospect. What it also shows is that his testimony at trial didn't jive with his prior statements. The case law has held that a parent has a common law duty to support their children until they're of age, until they're passed through minority into majority. I think that the initial case on that is the Dupree case from 1954. The obligation can be satisfied through child support, but actually that doesn't satisfy it. Statutory law is providing the means for receiving that child support and making sure that the person with custody of the child gets it. It's a procedural and remedial statute that embodies the common law. That doesn't mean that the payment of child support by itself completes it. In this case, Mr. Howard was supporting his child. And by doing that, he made payments based upon his ability to pay and by his agreement with Ms. Hamilton. Ms. Hamilton didn't come to court asking that there be some enforcement of a prior agreement. She just came to court and said, okay, let's raise it now, but he doesn't get a credit for what he's paid in the past. And that is what the courts found.
Counsel, do you know if there's any pet history on the cases, or in the case, in the interest of LKK and CMK out of Eastland? Any pet history?
I believe there's not.
No pet history, okay.
I believe that the record is clear that Mr. Howard made an agreement to pay additional child support as current support. That's what the findings of the court are. And as a consequence, the ruling of the trial court should be affirmed in all things. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McAllister. Mr. Worley?
May it please the court. I'm going to focus on the statutory construction arguments that the Attorney General made in his brief. In our view, Mr. Howard's interpretation puts Family Codes sections 154.012 and 154.014 at odds. Mr. Howard acknowledges that section 154.014 allows child support registries to credit child support payments according to the obliger's intent. But he also says that under section 154.012, there's a hard and fast rule that all payments exceeding court-ordered support are to be credited to future support or returned to the obliger once the obligation ends. Under this interpretation of section 154.012, overpayments are always refundable to the obliger under section 154.012, even though under section 154.014, a child support registry should be able to credit those payments as additional support to meet the child's current needs, if that's what the obliger had intended them to be. But the bottom line result of Mr. Howard's interpretation of section 154.012 is that obligers can never really pay extra to meet the current needs of the child. All overpayments are advance payments that are credited to future support and are thus refundable if there's a future support balance at the end of the obligation.
Isn't that clearly what the statute says, though?
Statute says that if there is that if he's made additional payments, that they are to be refunded. But in order to make that statement not conflict with 154.014, you have to interpret that to mean that those payments were not intended to be to go to meet the actual needs of the child. Otherwise, they're going to conflict.
Why doesn't it mean that anything that goes to the child support office has to be treated in one way, although a parent can make direct payments that are treated differently?
That would mean that all direct payments would have to be considered advance payments toward future support.
No, that's not what I said. Why?
Your Honors, I believe this is the only way that Mr. Howard can win. He can only win if all direct payments are to be counted as future support. Because if his intent can control and his intent can make those payments be credited as payments toward meeting the current needs of the child, well, we have evidence of his intent and we have challenged findings of his intent, and that evidence and those findings say that he intended those payments to meet the current needs of the child.
Why doesn't the statute mean that the child support office has to treat payments in a specific way? Because if they're a fiduciary, they can't just decide willy-nilly how they want to apply the payments. So anything they receive is applied to the court-ordered payments. If they receive excess money, they have to apply them to future obligations. Anything over the obligation in the court order has to be refunded at the end of when the child turns 18 or at the end of the child support. But if there is a direct payment to the child, a direct payment to the custodial parent, those payments are not treated under the statute directing the child support office or... Do you understand what I'm saying? That a person can pay additional child support that isn't considered excess
mm-hmm.
by paying it directly to the child or to the parent for the benefit of the child.
And those would be credited toward?
And those wouldn't be credited toward anything. They are common law support.
Okay. That actually would favor our position.
Well, I don't care whose position it favors.
That actually would be helpful toward us. That might be a better explanation for it than I came up with. Resolve a conflict better than our explanation, because in that case, if you pay through the registry, it's to be credited toward it's to be credited in accordance with the obliger's intent.
Right. Right.
And that could be meet the additional needs of the child. It could be future pay.
Well, but I don't think the child support office has that much discretion.
But the statute says that that's how we're supposed to credit. But if it's not clear, then we credit it toward future pay. But that might be a good explanation.
For what?
For the apparent conflict between the two statutes and a way to try to harmonize those two statutes. That if it's not paid through the registry, the common law controls. And under the common law, you can always pay additional support.
Are you talking about the statute that provides for... directing the payments in the way that the obligor expresses
that's correct.
His or her intent,
and
the statute that provides for what you do if the child support obligation is terminated.
That's correct. Those two statutes.
Well, why are we concerned about the latter statute when
we're concerned about
on its face it doesn't apply?
We're concerned about because I'm responding to an argument made by
okay, so we're just Mr. arguing
Howard.
Basically theory, hypothetical. If these statutes were to apply, this is the way it would work.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct. Neither one, you're quite correct.
Yes.
Neither one literally applies to this case.
Correct.
Because 154.012 applies to the end of the obligation. 154.014 applies to what happens when child support registry receives an excess payment. So literally neither one applies. But Mr. Howard has made an argument based on 154.014.
Yeah, he's made an argument that notwithstanding the fact that the statutes don't apply, that the principles in the statute should be looked to for guidance in determining what
correct.
To do in this case.
That's correct. And when you, my argument is if you go that route, then his position puts them at odds, but there is a way that they can be construed so that they're not at odds. But under that construction, Mr. Howard's appeal cannot succeed. And that concludes my presentation. If the court has any additional questions, I'd be happy to try to answer them. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Warden. Mr. Griffin.
More than anything, I want to point out a discrepancy that I gave you about the record. I've reviewed the record, and I believe I spoke earlier as to evidence that I believed was in the record that I looked at, and I do not want to in any way mislead this court. There was no testimony as to her agreeing to pay it, as to her requesting him to pay it. That's not the way it was in the record. I apologize to the court for that. What it was that I was misunderstanding was Mr. Howard, and this was not contradicted on cross-examination or on the mother's testimony, testified to a fact that in answering a question, you did that for the purpose of seeing how far ahead you were. Yes, sir. And as a matter of fact, it was whenever Tricia had approached me a few years back. She had asked to have the record of the child support payments that I had made on a steady basis so that she could get a loan on a house with her second husband. And I had it readily available, all the copies of the checks and 12 months on a spreadsheet to be able to give to her so that they could get that loan. And so I was remembering he had asked her something about this, and that's what she had come and asked him to. And I apologize to this court for misleading you. You are correct in that neither one of these statutes are directly on point. Neither one of these statutes apply technically to this case, as Mr. Worley pointed out. The second statute, 154014, doesn't kick in until the child support obligation terminates, which just so happens to be next month. So in June of 2009, we may have to revisit this issue again. Does the $13,185 under section 154012, is that now due to her in that he paid that amount in excess of the court-ordered obligation? There's no room for intent on that statute. If you paid a dollar more than the court-ordered obligation, she has to return it. And there's stiff consequences if you don't. If he has to file suit to get it, the court shall order attorney's fees and court costs in his favor. Because of the strictness of that statute, I don't believe the intent in the other statute can be interpreted that way. And yes, we can say it doesn't apply, but it has been stipulated on the record that he paid $13,185 in excess of the court-ordered amount. 154012, he gets the money in excess of the court-ordered obligation. It's very plain, black and white. I don't see how there's going to be room to wiggle on that.
What are you talking about, counsel? You don't see that there's going to be room to wiggle. You're talking about in the future when the child support
next
obligation
month.
Terminates?
That's correct, Your Honor.
What are we appealing an order that involves a terminated child support obligation?
No, here? Your Honor, we're not.
Okay.
And that's correct. I am not appealing that order. I am making...
Well, are you asking us to render an advisory opinion about what the trial
not,
court should do?
Absolutely not, Judge. My point is that...
Would principles of res judicata apply, perhaps, since the court's already ruled as to this amount of money and what's to be done with it?
I think this court, or the trial court, ruled that his intent, that's why I make the point about 012, is that the court's interpretation of his intent under 014 does not harmonize, as the state said, with what would be required later on down the road. We have to interpret these two statutes in harmony. If he can intend under...
Neither statute applies to this case. Both sides agree to that. So you keep referring us back to the statutes, but neither statute applies. So we have the court's findings that Mr. Howard intended that these payments be used for current support of his child, which is a commendable thing for him to do. And I would hope that the law would encourage parents to do that type of thing. But we're not here talking about, you know, how these statutes should be applied to this case, because they just simply don't apply.
Then I would, based on the court's finding, I'm not sure where she got, if he intended for it to be for current support, what's
counsel,
she basing that on?
That argument, that argument has actually been forfeited because you didn't challenge the court's finding of intent in this appeal. You didn't come here and to argue to us that the evidence doesn't support the trial court's finding. We've got to assume that it does. We're bound by the finding. It hadn't been challenged.
I understand, Judge, and I think you, if you're bound by the finding, that's fine. My argument is, where is her legal basis? Even if she finds that that's the intent, which is fine. Find that that's what he did. He intended for it to be that month's current child support when he paid the excess amount. What's the legal basis for not giving him the advance credit for it?
Common law. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Judge.
Court appreciates everyone appearing here this morning. Present your arguments. The case is submitted, and you're all excused. And Mr. McAllister, your apology is accepted, so no worry there.